And record. Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have Ebony Marcel, the director of Community of Hope's Midwifery Clinic. It's a federally qualified health center in Washington, D.C. So she's been a very busy lady today. So I appreciate her coming on and sharing her wisdom and experience. Ebony, just tell a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I've always been DC based. I have been practicing now for, matter of fact, today's my graduation day from MePew in 2007. So for 13 years. And I started off at this birth center and left for 5 years and then came back as the director about 5 years ago. And so nice mix of hospital, out of hospital birth, really, really tried to capitalize on the uniqueness of being a federally qualified health center. Birth center, there's only five left in the country. Really trying to advocate why there should be more. And also doing a lot of work outside of Community of Hope, focus on specifically Black maternal health, as well as health equity and anti-racism training.
And I know you said that you had been a midwife on the staff and came back as a director. What did you see was the big shift of responsibility and just role description from, because I know a lot of midwives are like, well, I want to start my own business, but they're always afraid to go from the one that's clinical on staff to more administration responsibilities. Do you mind going into that a little more?
So I was very fortunate to, when I first took the job out of school at the birth center, it wasn't a federally qualified health center at the time. It was just the birth center, but my director was very influential in the sense that she was like, I feel like you're gonna be a director one day, so I'm gonna make you do all this extra stuff. And so she just taught me a lot of different pieces that were part of the role. And definitely I would say there was a lot of unhealthy aspects of the director role at the time, just what a lot of people are dealing with when you are your own separate entity and the financial, and it's rough. And her, the director pre-FQHC, really had a lot more responsibilities than I have right now, which is really, really great. You know, she was in charge of the grants, trying to make sure that, you know, the credentialing, like there were just a lot of pieces that like I don't have to do, which is great. So I get to just be a midwifery director. But as far as transitioning from being a staff midwife to leadership, you know, definitely leadership isn't for everybody, but there's it's important, it's needed in order for midwifery to survive, to you know, to make it. We need more midwifery leaders. And does that mean that you have to lay different boundaries? Yes. Does it mean that you may not practice as much clinically? Yes. Does it mean that, like me, I've been in meetings since 8:40 this morning, and it's now almost 2-something straight, maybe a 15-minute break? Yes, lots of meetings. Does that mean you have to put out fires? Yes. But it's really rewarding to see the fruits of your labor at times, just to see, you know, how I'm continuing to grow midwifery. Like the place I was at before, it was three of us. By the time I left, there were nine of us. And even here at the birth center, within my first year, we were down to two midwives, and now there are 10 of us. And so definitely, definitely worth it. I hope that answers your question.
No, that was perfect. I loved it. I think just being able to see not too many midwives go from one to the other or the same facility, the same practice, like to see the dynamics on both sides and to kind of transition into that role. Like what made you decide to switch from the director? Was it more of a calling, or did you just know with your personality that would be a better fit?
No, I've always been bossy. I've always been in leadership roles, like, which is why very, like, not very commonly, but you know, I was basically, like, comparison wise, I was like an associate director, like 3 years out. Most midwives don't jump into leadership positions until, you know, much further in their career. And so, you know, very easily, I've been in some form of management in my midwifery career a lot more than I have just being a staff midwife. I just have always been in charge. And I think primarily because it's funny, my mentor used to always say to me, she was like, leaders can't watch poor leadership, which is very true. It's very frustrating. And I just, that's just how my mind works, strategy. I got a plan for A, B, C, and D constantly.
I agree wholeheartedly with you.
Yeah, but honestly, what ended up making me take this position, this director position, because I was, you know, across town, pretty comfortable, established seniority. But what made me jump this job, which a lot of people in the midwifery community were like, it's a death wish. Because the birth center had been closed for over a year, and a lot of folks didn't really have an idea of how it was going to ever be restored. And even going to, you know, conferences, like I went to AABC and I was like, help me, what is it to restore practice? There was nobody to talk to me about restoration. There were definitely people about building from new, but there was nobody about, hey, what do you do when the place has been closed?
Yeah, and I think that's where the biggest lacking is there's people that'll give you the teasers and the foundation, but that's, I mean, in my opinion, that's the planning easy part. It's once you get past that three to five year, you're out of the honeymoon stage and either the foundation cracks start coming through and now you're too busy that you can't fix them. I think it's harder to restore and to restructure practice versus starting. I love helping midwives with that because I think the latest statistic, just practitioners in general burn out by age, the average professional age of 6 years. And I was like, I bet for midwives it's sooner. I wish that we could support midwives better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think there is a research that says that most midwives stop practicing clinically after 5 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's
part an average. So think of those ladies that have been out there 30, 40 years, they're skewing that data.
Right. Which I don't know. I don't know. But yeah.
So I know you mentioned that there's 5 qualified health centers left in the country. So are they actually shrinking, or is, like, I guess, could you tell me a little more of the history and why is it such a challenge or misunderstandings with this option for a practice style?
So there, I believe there were up to 13. And now there's 5. So it has been reduced. And I have tried to jump on as many other folks who are at these leftover 5. They probably think I'm crazy, but anytime they're at a conference, I'm like, hey, you're at the other one. Can we talk? Yeah. I just want to hear. What I hear from a lot of folks is just the challenges of maybe foundationally how they were created. It's a lot different when you were a birth center who added primary care and then became an FQHC versus you were a primary care institution that merged and added midwifery versus you all started together, but still a heavier prioritization for the other aspects of it clinically. And so, Each of the different things brings their own unique set of challenges. Just off the top, you know, I did hear from a lot of people about how, you know, OBs, no, it doesn't make money. It does not make money. And so when you are a larger organization, why keep a limb that's not bringing you anything? I think also depending on what state you're in, how midwives are allowed to practice, is it a model that includes CPMs and CNMs? What's your market look like? What's your volume potentially going to be? Is everybody going to not only risk out medically, but maybe even socially? there's just a lot of different challenges. I think what I have grown to learn, and there's actually a really good paper, Dr. Jordana Frost. I was part of one of the birth centers. She interviewed the remaining five, and she interviewed not only the midwifery team, but also the CEOs, the financial people. Like, she interviewed a whole, like, a lot of different roles within the organization. And when Jordana interviewed me, I was like, I was clueless. I was like a year in and just hungry and just like, I'm gonna restore this place. I asked them for 2 years. I was like, give me 2 years to get the birth center back open and get intrapartum services restored. And then I did it in like 16 months. Yes, it took a good piece of my soul, but, you know, I was hungry and like determined. And I think about what I told her then versus what I would tell her now. And what I will tell you now, 5 years out, is things that are not discussed are maintaining midwifery integrity within the FQHC model. We are not the same. We don't have the same philosophies and beliefs. And there are a lot of structures that go with being an FQHC and, you know, trying to have report to HRSA outcomes, how your grant money comes in, that don't always align with midwifery. So how do you maintain midwifery integrity when you're just a small portion of a larger organization? Programming. What does that programming look like? Do you have power to have influence on how, you know, that program is functioning? What is the population that they're taking care of? Have there been considerations about cultural awareness? You know, a lot of the cookie cutter kind of like template examples are not culturally aware. And so, you know, definitely I think that there are a lot of benefits, right? So what do a lot of people from an entrepreneurial standpoint struggle with? Malpractice, being a federally qualified health center. You know, anybody sues me, sues Uncle Sam. That beautiful occurrence, malpractice. You're not trying to worry, we don't have to worry about a tail. You have the opportunity, like I said, to really hone in and focus on everything involving midwifery, not being worried about more so like the day-to-day infrastructure logistics. There's a team that takes care of credentialing. There's a team that takes care of the finances. There's a team that organizes and makes sure that you're ready for your Department of Health, you know, visit or your visit from AABC instead of it being solely on that midwife. There's a lot of benefits. And I think when wanting to care for populations like Medicaid, where you know the reimbursement is crap, this type of model is really helpful.
It's trying to find the best of both worlds. It's trying to find the support of the bigger system, but still being able to have the autonomy to be a midwife and midwifery model of care. It's a fine dance to play. And I think you've done a really good job with it of being able to utilize the resources, but stay grounded with the philosophy and the model of care.
Like fighting over like office visit times. FQHCs have 20-minute appointments. And I was like, there's no way in hell a midwife is going to see a new OB in 20 minutes. And I just kept blinking, looking at her like, no. New OBs have to be at least 40. I really want an hour. Yeah. I'll meet you in the middle and go 40. Yeah. But like, actually, we're still going to break it up in two. And I got a 20-minute established where I get some of that hour long and then do a 40-minute new OB. Just like that.
Yeah, things you take for granted that unfortunately our healthcare system is that quantitative volume aspect versus quality. And how do we impose on a preventative and a quality base with midwifery? I think mental health and midwifery are more in common than we think as far as just justifying the cause and the demands. It is challenging. So you said there's 10 midwives on the team. What's the average like birth volume? How many ratio the hospital versus birth center? And has that fluctuated over time?
So three of my team, sorry.
I was going to say, you're a talented woman. Are you really just pumping while we're interviewing?
I'm not pumping.
Oh, you're nursing a sweetheart. Oh, you put just on the other side. Oh,
yeah. She totally just went to sleep. And
that's when you know you're a true midwife. You can bring your baby to work and you can multitask. Girl, you're amazing.
I know it's so funny. As many presentations I've done, completely nursing the whole time. But I have three per diems. And I have my associate, and then there are five full time, and then there's me. We are extremely lucky that our leadership believes in midwifery and what we're doing, because our volume doesn't match for the amount of FTEs that I have. So we are caring for a lot more patients than we are delivering them. And so we'll average anywhere from about 20 on a low month till about 35 dues. We have some outlier months, like 40, 45. And then we'll deliver around 20. And a lot of different things go into that. We have a lot of moms who don't have transportation and use the ambulance. Sometimes, a lot of times, our institution is on diversion. And so even if they jump the ambulance, it's not going to take them to where we are. We have folks who want to deliver at other hospitals because past trauma at where we have privileges. We only have privileges at one, thank God. Can't imagine trying to have privileges at multiple hospitals. It's already hard enough trying to cover the hospital and the birth center. Yeah. Folks risk out. A birth center, not just, like I said, medically earlier, but socially. And so we don't have what you would see as far as like for every FTE, I think, to like make salary, benefits, budgets, and all that. They deliver at least 4 to 5. We cover, the other thing that we do is that we cover a lot of office. And so see patients at two different sites. And pre-COVID, we were doing 5 days at one office, 2 days at another office, and then 4 centering groups a week. Heavy. But that's how I compensate for us not doing as much delivery-wise.
And I think that's a lot when I talk to directors or practices that are having challenges. So many people think, well, we've got to get more births. We got to get more births. And that may not necessarily be it. There's so many other wonderful ancillary services outside of our scope. We just may not be creatively thinking about we can collaborate or utilize, especially being part of a bigger organization. You could see easier the needs versus being private. Like, okay, this specialty, did you know midwives could do primary care? Did you know like XYZ? So kudos to you for getting creative with that, because it does. I think you instantly start doing more call and more demand, that burns out the midwives more versus the office a little more structured.
You make more money. You know, like you figure a lot of times for Medicaid births, professional fees, you don't get the facility. If you deliver in the hospital, you know, you might make $700. With being a federally qualified health center and enhanced fees, you know, you can average over $200 for an office visit. If you see even on a light schedule 15, 20 patients, you make way more money from a day office than you do from a birth. And sometimes you've committed to 48 hours of manpower.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as far as RVUs and time, like I stress with a lot of midwives, that's one of the first ratios. I'm like, okay, what is your OBGYN mix? And many of them are like 5-10% GYN. And I'm like, let's bump that more to 60-40, because it is, like you said, for RVUs, you've got more of a cushion, the time that the midwife is spending, whether that's right or wrong, but it's just the way the system it is in the insurance reimbursement. Those procedures, that office time has a higher revenue value unit. And we could argue all day long why maternity isn't paid well, but yeah, I agree with you. So as far as Ebony, I know you've got so many wonderful plans and visions for the birth center and practice. Do you have any like concrete goals the next 3 to 5 years, or like helping other practices do federally? Like, what's your big ultimate dream with
I would like complicated, right? I have definitely my professional goals with COH, and I have my professional goals for me, just period, point blank. Yep. I would like to, for however much longer I'm at COH, which I don't anticipate leaving anytime soon, I understand that what I'm being offered is unique in the sense that I have a leadership that really has been supportive and really allowed me to create and be innovative. And that's back, you know, talking back again about that power. You know, I've been allowed to really have a lot of say about the programming and not only that, but policy. You know, I'm the one that demanded we get rid of that late policy. I was like, I don't care if she's late. We're going to see her. You're going to see her.
Especially if there's a lot of barriers to get in and yeah.
Exactly. But I would love for us to utilize the birth center a lot more. And I think that's going to be possible. COVID might have just given us the edge. We just got to get more of the foundational pieces antepartum to make them be more successful intrapartum.
Yeah.
So I would like to utilize the birth center a lot more. I would like to continue to do things very differently. I feel like we offer for this population in particular who has, you know, higher numbers as far as birth disparities are concerned, I would like for us to continue to create a really unique model that we can argue should be replicated, that's like not only being done well, but also being reimbursed appropriately for. Still a lot of work for that. Yeah. You know, I don't want to have to like bill somebody for a 2-week visit as, you know, mood disturbance. I should be billing somebody for a 2-week damn visit.
Because of, yeah, the preventative importance versus getting creative with diagnosis codes.
Yeah. It should just be the standard. Early postpartum care should be the standard. So I just want to keep creating, keep kind of, you know, growing some of the things that we've been doing, you know, talk about the benefits of what it really looks like to be patient-centered, you know, not just say it.
Yeah.
A lot of people are not doing it. You know, I talk a lot about now everybody's writing in their damn charts, shared decision making. I'm like, was it really shared decision making? Yeah. You mad she didn't do what you wanted her to do. Yeah. So, you know, there's still a lot for me to do there. Outside of COH, I still teach at Georgetown quarterly. I do lecture on racism and health disparities. So I'd like to continue to grow that. I'm doing some work with IHI and health equity. So I would like to continue to kind of grow. There's really not a lot of midwives on the health equity conversation, racism kind of piece.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. We need more experts like you that are out there. Like, I just, you're a wealth of knowledge to me. What advice would you give midwives, whether they're brand new or been practicing for a while and just aren't quite happy with where they're at? Like, what would you give them as advice? If that was a midwife sitting in front of you, she was a friend, kind of just telling you she's frustrated, what would you say to her?
Don't be afraid to do something different and to change. And that know that I feel like they try to brand in you that you're not a midwife unless you are totally like wearing Birkenstocks and boots and like in the field telling people to have a baby. That's not true. Midwifery sometimes means that you're doing all GYN at Planned Parenthood and learn how to be okay with like just the alternatives. And to try stuff, yeah. And to figure out what aspects you really, really like. Don't stay anywhere where you're being harmed. If the environment is toxic and abusive, you don't owe people anything, don't stay there. And like, you know, be mindful about where you're trying to work, especially brand new midwives. Anybody that I mentor, I'm like, do not pick a job being fixated on money. Don't do it. You'll pick a job and yeah, they pay a ton of money, but you're going to get a 2-week orientation and people are irritated if you want to call them at 2 o'clock in the morning. When you really need them. Yeah, so just being really smart about where they're trying to work. And then if they're not happy, leave. Look for some alternatives and be willing to jump. Create your own. I tell a lot of women that I've mentored, you know, make a home birth practice. Do it.
And that's part of you know, what my passion is. Not as much
overhead
is.
Trying to run a facility.
Mm-hmm. Nope, I agree. Yeah, part of my passion is just inspiring that business. And it some people are good at being employees and some people are good at being part of the bigger system. And some people are just more that entrepreneurial spirit and may or may not be enticed to branch out into it. Because it is, it's scary to do something brand new and not know. So yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's just, it's learning. I think there's too much branding of what a midwife looks like in our society and among our profession. I mean, like to me, I still do a little bit of home births, but most of what I do is helping midwives. Like, I'm midwifing midwives. Like I am helping them expand and grow their practices. And like by your video right now, you're midwifing midwives with like, I think we get past it has to be holding their hand, catching the baby. And that's the core brand of a midwife. So yeah, if they have any questions of me, how may they get a hold of you? Like, are you comfortable with just having an email or just letting, because especially the Federally Qualified Health Center, if anybody, I've got a few groups that are really curious about it, if they can ask you some questions.
Right? Mm-hmm. Sure, so email is best, and also patience, just because juggling all the things. Do not be offended if I don't call you back immediately or email you back immediately. And then I also want to put a plug in there. I have not done the infrastructure pieces of it. I don't want you to call me and be like, hey, how did you, maybe it was already done before I got there. But just know that piece.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'd be better at not so much the startup of a federally qualified, but the running and the day-to-day operations, which is still just as important.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I'll do, Ebony, at the bottom of the video, when I post it, I'll put your email if they have any questions and would like to connect with you.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And your daughter is beautiful. Like I was going to joke that being politely persistent, I asked for our first interview 6-7 months ago and you were just going on maternity leave. So I asked if I could follow up 6 months later and it's all timing. So that's part of, I think people get discouraged like, oh, she didn't want to talk to me. And I'm like, no, everybody's got lives. Everybody, we're all passionate to help. You just have to give the timing and everything. Mm-hmm. So. Well, have a great day, Ebony, and thank you so much for your time today.
You are so welcome.